My name is Chad Lee, and I have to say this is my first time here in front of your court. It's the first time I've written an appeal since law school. Well, thank you. I'm both honored and humbled by the experience. I only hope I can do my client Patrick Hennessy service. Briefly, the facts on this case are on the 15th day of August, 2008. My client, Patrick Hennessy, was driving down the road on Interstate 30. He had a single car accident at the Forest Park intersection. Several people arrived on scene. One notable one was Officer Caffey. It's Caffey or Caffney, I believe, in here. It's Officer Caffey. And Officer Caffey testified that he smelled a strong odor of alcohol on my client. That was about the limit of his interaction with my client. He then called in a DWI expert who later testified that he was unsure whether he could remember if he smelled alcohol or not. There was no testimony from the EMS personnel who arrived that they smelled alcohol. They, in fact, checked off that he was normal in every way on the report that they made. Eventually, my client was arrested by Officer Bagnell, who was the DWI expert. He followed my client in the EMS vehicle to Johns Peter Smith Hospital, where he interviewed my client. My client refused, or appellant, excuse me, refused to provide a breath specimen or blood draw on the case. He was then taken into the ER with a minor injury to his knee that was subsequently treated. There were a number of people in the emergency room at the time. The state produced an LVN, Charles Klein. Charles Klein testified that he was aware that police officers were outside the waiting room, that my client was under arrest. Officer Bagnell also testified that my client was under arrest and that officers had been left outside the emergency room there to essentially guard his existence. So everyone knew that he was in custody at that point. He further testified under oath that the blood was taken from my client for medical purposes. They do that in every case, and that they need that in order to be able to determine what type of treatments he might need, because they don't want to give him something that might injure him. Yet he further testified under cross-examination that they didn't receive these results until after all the treatment was complete. Now, for my argument for the court today, I'm going to start off with the testimonial issue as to whether or not those blood test results in this case were testimonial. That's the crux of my argument. Then I'll address a couple of the points that the state has made in their brief, and I should be through in about 7 or 8 minutes.
Just from a practical standpoint, are you asserting that the hospital shouldn't draw blood until they go get a search warrant?
No, Your Honor.
You're confronted with, you know, a line of people coming in whose injuries range from traumatic to minor, and they may not know, even after they're triaged, what the significance of the injuries are, whether they really need the blood. I mean, from a practical standpoint, I don't see how this could work.
Sure. From our position, Your Honor, what I believe has to occur is exactly what LVN Klein testified to, is that in a hospital blood draw, they need that information to be able to make that assessment. And I agree with the court in that respect. But in this instance, they didn't use that information for any therapeutic purpose. And I think if they're not going to use it for a therapeutic purpose, they're aware that a client's in custody, that they can reasonably contemplate that that evidence is going to be used in the future in testimony in a trial.
But isn't it reasonable to assume that at the time they drew the blood, which is, I assume, prior to an examination of the patient and a decision as to exactly what treatment, and get in there and, you know, do some medical work?
Well, actually, at this point, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Your Honor.
They don't know.
I agree with you in part, Your Honor, but I also disagree in that he'd been receiving treatment from EMS. EMS had evaluated him. That indicated through their report that they testified to in the record that he was ambulatory, that his physical faculties were normal, that his mental faculties were normal. It was important to note that his eyes were of equal pupil size. They tested for any closed head injury. They were looking at, and had already made a lot of assessments at that point. They get him into the hospital, and according to the medical records that were in there, testimony with Charles Klein, that those records indicated that he had received a lot of a treatment before they even drew the blood. I'd have to go back to the exact records. I do not have them on me.
All right. Well, I'll let you get on with your argument. But, I mean, the bottom line is your argument from a practical standpoint is, in this case, they didn't need to do a blood draw.
Absolutely, Your Honor. They did not need to do a blood draw on him. Simply
because an assessment that they should make in each case that comes in.
Well, I think what they should assess is if you are going to have a standard, then you should adhere to it. If your standard is we need those blood draw results before you can actually test before we can actually give you any therapeutic treatment, before we can give you the tetanus shot or any of the other things that we have because you're of a fear for drugs or alcohol or any other substance in the system, then adhere to that standard. And that's what we think that they did not do in this case, was adhere to that standard.
But you have not contested the aspect of the facts, at least as on this record, that the hospital personnel were the ones that decided whether or not to draw blood.
And that's correct, Your Honor. As far as the issue on there was not a, I'll admit readily, there was not an issue from the police department saying, I don't have any factual evidence that shows that the police requested a blood draw. There's not a search warrant, even though they knew they could obtain one, but there's nothing like that in the record.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, as far as the test goes, it's easily outlined in Crawford versus U.S. and also applied in Melendez-Diaz versus Massachusetts that evidence testimonial when it's taken under circumstances which would lead an objective witness reasonably to believe that the statement would be available for use at a later trial. In this case, I think the test applied says we have officers standing outside the emergency room. We have everyone aware, unless you've closed your eyes, that my client's under arrest, that there's no therapeutic use at that point, and that they didn't follow their own standards and said, you know, we're going to draw it, but we're not going to use it. So for what purpose does it have at that point?
They drew it, right?
Right.
Then they treated it. Then the results came back. They didn't like
right.
They treated him, we're done, but we're going to go and get this in.
That's right. Exactly a correct factual
right.
statement, Your Honor. That's exactly how it worked. And they were in the process of treating him. They drew blood. They continued to treat and did not receive those results until after it was over. I still believe that that evidence is testimonial and subject to confrontation, simply because at this point, what they have is an inability to identify anyone in that room that drew the blood. Now, under cross-examination, LVN Klein testified that all the people in that room were certified to draw blood with the exception of one. Now, we can't be certain who drew the blood, which is what his testimony is. We don't know who drew it. We don't know. If I remember correctly, we even asked him if someone could have come in off the street and drawn it. He said, absolutely not, of course. But at the end of the day, they do not know who that person is. They can't identify them. We believe that that is important because in establishing the chain of custody, that beginning and that end are very important to the confrontational side of testimony. We need to be able to be assured that it was actually the person, my client, that they drew the blood from, that the procedures that they used were those that would not hinder or hamper that sample in any way. Then, of course, we want to know that it was finally analyzed on the end and that it was his blood and that that individual down there did his job correctly. The court's been very clear in saying that everything in the middle is more goes more to the weight than the admissibility of the evidence. Now, to address a couple of points that the state has made, one, the state has waived that the appellant waived any argument that he might have had, any objection that he might have had, by allowing the medical records to come in the first place. And in some instances, I would say that the case would, you know, the state might be correct. But there's two instances here, two reasons that we would submit to the court that in this case that objection was not waived. The first would be that we believe the spirit of the law in this area of waiver is to say that is to prevent an unringing of the bell. And in this case, the bell was not rung yet at the point the objection was made under the Sixth Amendment. The reason the bell was not rung is that that evidence had not been introduced to the trier of fact. The trier of fact had not had their hands on the medical records. The record will reflect that they had not published that ethanol level until the very last witness came in, which was Mark Fondren. We believe that that's the first reason that the objection was not waived. The second one would be that the need to object arose when LVN Klein testified. Prior to that LVN Klein's testimony that they could not identify that first person in the chain of custody, there was no way to know, nothing in the record to indicate that that would be a problem. When that problem first arose, it was objected to, and we feel like error was preserved at that point. The last issue that I'll address, well, two more issues, I'm sorry, but briefly, the testimonial issues. The state takes objection with two parts of meaning whether or not this evidence is testimonial. The first one they address, they look at a case, Martin versus State. They also look at case Wood and Hamilton. And just addressing Martin and the issue with Mark Fondren, what they are essentially saying is that Mark Fondren came in and that even if the medical records were objectionable and they could have been kept out, that Mr. Fondren, as an expert, should have been able to go in, review those records, and testify to what was in them. The problem with their argument that if you go down to page 19, lines 13, 14, and 15 of the state's brief, they state that an expert at the end of the side case testified to a test performed by a subordinate. Okay, in this situation, much like the Martin versus State case, I believe that one was an issue where they were within the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's office. One of the people was unavailable. They allowed their superior to come in and testify to what those normal procedures would have been, how they did it, what they did. That might work here if Mark Fodner worked for the John Peter Smith Hospital. He does not. He testified that he worked for the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's office. He's not in the chain in there in JPS Hospital. He doesn't have any subordinates over there. He's just simply testifying, essentially speculating at this point, is what it might have been if they had performed it the same way they would have done at the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's office. We don't believe that should hold weight in this situation. His testimony should not be allowed to bring that into evidence. The other issue that they
Well,
it's one that they addressed in their appellate brief that I didn't object to in the trial court. And so it was interesting that they addressed that in saying that Mr. Fodner's testimony should have been allowed to bring that blood evidence in. And so it's like they brought up another appellate issue in there for me to argue, which by my way of thinking, the objection was that the medical records and that blood draw that was in there were the objectionable portion of what we were looking at. And if they didn't come in, Mr. Fodner wouldn't have been allowed to look at them in the first place.
We know an expert can testify based on documents or whatever that don't come in because they're hearsay.
Sure, because they are hearsay. That's true. But they were basing his testimony specifically off those documents that they had admitted. Had those documents not been admitted, there wasn't a backdoor way to bring that in.
And isn't that a different, there's no basis for the expert's opinion?
I believe so, Your Honor. The state makes one final argument that would have been harmless if, in fact, that these records were admitted due to the facts that were in evidence at the time, the accident and the odor of alcohol. And I would argue that in the exact opposite for my client, in that all the state had was one officer who was apparently a subordinate officer. He was not qualified to do all the field sobriety tests. He called in an expert, a DWI expert, which is what Officer Bagnell testified that he was. Officer Bagnell said, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know whether I smelled alcohol or not. We then have the EMS personnel who all testified that on all their documents that they had that he was normal. He could walk, talk, think. His mental and physical processes were normal at that point. Absent that blood draw, you've got a jury that has a very real chance to find the client not guilty. In fact, they were out for an hour and a half with a blood draw at over twice the legal limit. Your Honor, for these reasons, the appellant would respectfully pray this court reverse his conviction and render a judgment of acquittal, or in the alternative, reverse and remand for a new trial. If I have nothing further, unless the judges have any more questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Messerly.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Shelley Messerly. I represent the state of Texas in this matter. I'd just like to start out with the waiver argument. The state maintains and asserts that this issue is waived. The first day of trial, there was a hearing, and appellant did argue that the blood evidence, should be kept out based on a HIPAA argument. That was overruled. The very next witness was Mr. Klein. The medical records, State's Exhibit 2, were entered into evidence, and appellants specifically said that he had no objection to those medical records coming in. He stated that he had had those, the state had presented those to him on a timely basis, he'd had them for a few months, and he affirmatively said he had no objection. And if you look on page 27 of State's Exhibit 2, you see the lab results, which includes the blood test result. So the state maintains that those were waived. It was the very next day, the second day of trial, that appellant brought up his Crawford argument. And by that time, it's too late. I want to kind of talk.
The position is if they're entered into evidence at a hearing, they're entered in for all purposes, then you don't have to wait to basically reoffer it or something in front of the jury. That's your position.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And I want to touch on just a few.
Ms. Messerly, I'd like to understand the sequence of events.
Sure.
Because I'm a little confused at the moment. When you say the records were admitted, you mean that the records themselves were tendered as evidence and admitted as an exhibit?
Yes, sir.
And there were no questions about the records in terms of the blood draw and blood test results at the time that they were tendered?
Yes, sir.
There was no testimony about it at that point.
There was some testimony from the nurse. His name is Mr. Klein. He did testify.
I understand. Klein's a nurse.
Sure.
What I'm asking you is, from what I understood you say and what I understood Mr. Lee to say, the objection on the confrontational rights and the Crawford objections and the issues dealing with proof of the person who took the blood being in a position where it was testimonial activity, those things were raised by the defendant on the second day of trial. I'm trying to determine if they were raised in advance of the time that any witness testified about the blood draw and the results.
And let me make sure I understand your question, sir. The second day of trial, yes, the appellant raised the Crawford issue in regard to the person who drew the blood. As far as exactly what testimony had occurred at that time, as you said, only Mr. Klein had testified as to the procedures used to draw blood. When he raised his Crawford issue, I don't believe there had been any testimony as to the appellant's exact blood test level, live testimony. It had come in through the medical records.
And so when Judge McCarr asked you if your position was once the evidence was tendered and admitted as an exhibit, then it was too late to raise Crawford issues?
That's the state's position, sir. Yes. Sure. I'd just like to touch on a few of the facts of the case.
Let me ask one more question.
Sure.
Was the actual evidence already in evidence that was in the record, or was there conclusions drawn by the expert which enhanced or were different from what was in the record? In other words, could you just given the record to the jury and they could have seen, oh, okay, this guy was .20, or were there conclusions drawn from what was in the evidence that differed from what was in the evidence and given to the jury by the expert?
Mark Fondren did draw some conclusions based on that blood test, based on the number that was in the medical records. I mean, the blood, if you look at the medical records, it clearly says ETOH, ethyl, and it has a number. It does. However, Mark Fondren did, after examining those medical records and looking at the testing procedures used by Mr. Payabear, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, he was one of the state's witnesses, he analyzed the testing procedures used, and he did draw some conclusions based on the number that was in the medical records, along with the testing procedures and other things. So just to get back to a few of the facts, I want to point out that the state disagrees with appellant's kind of interpretation of this car accident. When the police officer arrived at the scene, appellant's car was upside down. I mean, it was completely upside down. So that's why they insisted that he be taken to the hospital. In fact, he was entered into the trauma unit, and as Nurse Klein said, anytime somebody comes into the trauma unit, they take their blood every single time. It's standard of care. So, I mean, I think there was some discussion and some evidence that perhaps that he had had some kind of internal injuries or something to that effect. So taking blood is something I just want to point out in the trauma unit they do every single time. Let me start out. I also wanted to mention the Melendez case, if you don't mind. Something that we've been talking about back and forth here. And I want to point out that the very beginning of the Melendez case, I think it's footnote two. In fact, the United States Supreme Court specifically points out that medical reports created for treatment purposes, such as the one in this case, would not be testimonial under the decision today in the Melendez case. And they cite to a case called Barber. It is a case out of Florida. And in that case, a hospital record containing a blood test made specifically for medical purposes was admitted. And the court said that those type of records may be admitted in criminal cases and are not considered testimonial and not subject to confrontation. They were very clear about that. About 2 months after the Melendez case came down, this court decided Martin, as we've been talking about. And in fact, Judge Meyer, you were actually on that case. Right. And as I said, it was handed down 2 months afterwards. Our office made sure that you all were aware of the Melendez case, so I'm assuming you consider that, considering it came down afterwards. But that case is very similar to this one. The difference in that case is that the blood test, it was a DWI case, the blood test was ordered pursuant to the police, you know, obtained a warrant, and they actually obtained the blood test. In this case, it was strictly for medical purposes. But besides that, it was very similar. Dr. Springfield, who also works at the same office that Mark Fondren works at, did not draw the blood, did not test the blood, but they were both experts, and they were able to examine the testing procedures and how everything was done. And because they were experts, they were able to testify about the results of the blood test. Completely different from Melendez-Diaz. In Melendez-Diaz, all you had were affidavits saying this substance is cocaine. We don't have that in this case. We had the nurse testify as to how the blood was drawn. We had the analyst testify as to how the blood was tested. And we had Mark Fondren testify as to the results and what he actually saw in the blood. And if you also look at Mark Fondren's testimony, he didn't just blindly just assume that this blood was tested correctly. In fact, in his testimony, he specifically states that sometimes he doesn't sponsor these tests. In fact, he said he really looked at this one to make sure it had been conducted properly and made sure that it had, and he felt comfortable and was confident that it had been done correctly. At that point, he testified about the results of the test of the alcohol that was found in defendant's blood. In regard to harm, I wanted to touch on that too. The state does assert that even if there was error, which we do not think at all there was, that it would have been harmless. If you recall from the facts, appellant told two people, Officer Bagnell and John Ferris, he was the paramedic with MedStar, that he had been drinking before the accident and that he had consumed 3 Crown and Coke alcoholic beverages. He also told Bagnell that he had just left a bar called City Streets and that he had lost control of his car. Officer Coffey also testified that when he approached appellant, he noticed a strong smell of alcohol coming from him. So even without this blood test evidence, the evidence was overwhelming and sufficient to show that this man had been driving while intoxicated.
But was there testimony that just regardless of the numerical blood alcohol level, that there he had lost control of his faculties, or the buzzwords that are used?
Yes.
In the DWI case?
Yes.
There was opinion testimony without the blood test results that he had lost the normal use of his faculties?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Yes. I believe that was Officer Bagnell, the DWI officer that testified to that. Yes, sir.
So your position is of the two ways in which to obtain a DWI conviction, your position is we can throw out the blood test results because we've got the other method.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. And if there's no further questions, the state will just stand on its brief and ask that this court affirm the trial court's judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Messerly. Mr. Lee, rebuttal.
Mr. Lee, let me ask you a quick question.
That's fine.
Seems to me that you're obviously trying to suppress the blood test results that are contained in the records.
Absolutely.
But the records come in and containing the blood test results, and there's not an objection until they start being used. But once they're in, the jury could read them and do with them what they want, and they're in evidence. And I'm having trouble understanding that the objection is timely because they're already there.
And sure.
The delay is until they start to be used in front of the jury.
Okay. And I understand your concern with that, Your Honor. The issue that I take with that is that those records had not been admitted for all purposes into the record. In other words, not published, not done anything with the jury. The trier of fact had no access to them at that point. There's not, as I recall on the record, an admittance for all purposes there. If there is,
I assume not a limitation or any sort.
Right. But at that point, whenever they first began to testify about what those records might contain, they had not brought up the ethanol content. They had not interpreted what that ethanol might mean in terms of, you know, is this a true content or is it higher or lower than actually what that is? That's something that they had to have Mr. Fondren or another expert come in and testify to.
I don't want to take up all your rebuttal.
No, that's fine. That was one of the points I was going to address. And what I was going to say is about the document, had they just handed that document to the jury at that point, it was a document about 3 inches thick. I don't believe there's a jury around that could have gone through there and found exactly what my client's blood alcohol content was just by reviewing that document. They had to have other testimony in there.
How are you going to address her argument, which just came up, that
the loss of normal
youth? Expert's testimony, yes.
Absolutely, I can address that. And that's my last point that I wanted to make, was Officer Bagnell. He testified that he did not remember smelling any alcohol on my client. He testified that he did not perform any standardized field sobriety tests, not the horizontal gaze nystagmus, not the walk and turn, not the one-leg stand. I asked him very specifically about the horizontal gaze nystagmus because that's one that's allegedly their most accurate test in which you don't have to be ambulatory to perform. You can check their eyes and it indicates a level of intoxication. And he did not offer to administer that to my client. Where he comes up with the idea that he was intoxicated, other than the fact that there was an accident and another officer testifying that there was an odor of alcohol on him.
And
he admitted drinking. But at the end of the day, those are very weak facts. Especially facts that Officer Bagnell did not gather. The only interaction we have that indicates an odor of alcohol and admitted drinking is the interaction with Officer Coffey, who had just a very limited, brief moment of interaction with my client as he was sitting in the back of the EMS vehicle. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, that's all I have.
Please, you did very fine for your first appearance.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Thank you, Ms. Messerly. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted, and you all are excused. We will adjourn for 10 minutes for a panel change.
All rise.